Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor. FM to get started.
Hey there, Rooster Teeth fans. Welcome to another episode of the Nomad of Nowhere After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. Tonight, we are talking about Season 1, Episode 2, Bliss Hill. Join us as we travel to the Oasis, meet Don Paragon himself, and the less nice town of Bliss Hill. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin!
Jordy, is that you?
Guys, I'm in the Oasis.
Kenji?
different Oasis.
No.
Mark, not that Oasis. We need you to come back. Mark, come back.
What's happening?
What did you see?
Everybody was Tracer.
Whoa.
That was it.
An entire team of Tracers?
No.
Allowed?
Just Tracer.
I mean, if you're playing Anything Goes, then yes, it is allowed. And I say that having played an entire team of Brigitte's last week, which was bliss.
I don't think that's how the Oasis works. I don't know. I haven't seen the movie yet. But anyway, hello there, Rooster Teeth fans. Welcome back to Rooster Teeth Reviews, a.k.a. the Nomad of Nowhere After Show right now. Let me go ahead and introduce my fantastic panel to my left, Mark Donica.
It's me. That's all we can do.
And to his left, Katie Cullen.
Hi, all my buddies. I guess our audio started early because the chat definitely caught me singing You'll Be Back. So there's that. Head to my left.
I'm making Selena's hey, guys. We are going to be keeping an eye on the hashtag RTReviews. Katie and Mark, have you both covered on the live chat for those of you wanting to participate live? Yeah, let's go ahead and get on down into the nitty-gritty. By the way, Steve, our engineer, what is the name of this song? Because having to describe it to you was quite a chore on my part.
To be honest, I still don't quite know.
Okay. Is this the theme to the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly?
Okay, it's just the theme. I know the song itself actually has a name, but yeah, it's just themed to the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
I mean, it doesn't really matter. It's just the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. In much the same way that piece of Inception music doesn't need a name because all you have is bomb.
When I was a kid, my dad's a big fan of Westerns, and he had a compilation CD of a bunch of different random Western songs, and this one was always my favorite.
Rightfully so.
But it had a name.
The horse, for the man from Mystic River, or whatever that movie was, where the horse killed his father.
Snowy River.
Snowy River.
That's a different discussion for a different day.
Shout out to Ennio Morricone, who composed the music.
Morricone.
Absolutely beautiful. All right, guys, let's talk about this episode and not The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Or Ready Player One.
Or Ready Player One.
Great.
Or any of the works of
Clint Eastwood. I don't want to talk about that.
Or Overwatch.
I hit a sure spot? I'm sorry, Mark.
No, more on that because we don't have time to talk about plugs until after the show.
Okay. So, guys, initial thoughts on this episode, because I will definitely admit kind of some of the stuff we came across in this episode was not what I was expecting.
I am marking time until this show straight up makes me cry. Like, this show is going to make me ugly cry at some point. It's going to happen. I'm just waiting for it.
Oh. Is it? What? May I ask?
Yes.
Why? What is it about it?
Because feelings and the Nomad keeps getting kicked around like a half-inflated football, and that makes me sad.
I can see. Okay, I see that. I like just more of the world that we live in. And as I said a couple of times last week, wait till this week to be able to talk about stuff. I think we're seeing a little bit more with Toth being a victim of circumstance, and I like how... at least in this, she's showing to be a little bit more of More of a complex person than just a I need the avatar. Sorry.
Yeah.
I need the nomad. Yeah.
You're right.
What is my quest for redemption look like again?
And in that same note, seeing more from Toth, but seeing exactly the same from Scout, of just like I'm just a poppy. Like something. It was just very, very good. Very
she
good.
She's a sweet ray of sunshine in an otherwise desolate world. I very much loved getting to see the Oasis, and I feel like the little bits of world building that we got in this episode really did help flesh things out a little bit more. And like I said, I was not expecting what we got when it actually came to Don Paragon. I was not expecting to actually see him so soon.
Oh, really?
Because I thought he was higher up on the food chain. Mm. Because he's the only one that gets mentioned in the first episode. But no, we realize there's a little bit more of a hierarchy here. And I do have to ask, Mark, you were really excited to talk about it last week. So yeah, let's talk about what was your initial reaction to Don Paragon?
What a D-bag. I mean, kind of expected. I perfect reveal in terms of course, this is a person that has their portrait all over the place, but also just the fact that that's a door and he can make that type of an entrance and just be the biggest D-bag, arguably, in the entire Wild West.
Now, yeah.
If you're familiar with Gravity Falls, he strikes me up and down as a somewhat grown-up little Gideon.
Oh, he's got the same hair.
He's got the same hair.
He's got the same hair. Yeah. He's got the same aesthetic. He's got a similar voice. He's terrifying in that under your skin creepy way.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm wondering, I'm like, did he have a sort of lever or button set up to get the doors to open that way?
Pressure plate.
Ah, there
pressure
you
plate.
Go.
It's like Minecraft.
Ah, I see. That makes sense.
Bunch of redstone.
I think it's very telling that he is pale as a ghost. Now, if you'll indulge me for a moment to just hop on over into Conspiracy Corner, what are the odds that a man who lives in a desert like this actually is that pale, or is he a Nosferatu, a vampire, or a goat, an undead specter of some sort?
I think it's sorry, it's Mark. Something of an ancient Grecian status symbol. Like, being that pale means that you don't have to work the field. You don't have to live outside. You
it's
live
everywhere.
A life of luxury.
Not just Greece.
No, it persists to this day. Yeah. Although, in recent years, it's sort of gotten flipped a little bit, because if you go out and tan, if you are of lighter skin, but you go out and get tan, that means you have the money and the time to go out and get tan.
Yeah.
But traditionally speaking, yeah, the paler you were, usually the richer you were.
The New World a doctrine of GTL, as it were. I don't know if anybody in our audience will get that joke, or if anybody at the table will get that joke. It's from Jim Tan Laundry. It's from the Jersey Shore. It was a television series that ran on MTV, which didn't even run music. God damn it.
Sounds
no,
like I, something about
it's,
a situation.
It's Malachroma. Totally him being a D-bag.
Malachroma says, they put Gideon, King George, and Whitley in a blender and press the douchebag setting.
I mean, you're not wrong.
And you know what that sounds like? As it's going around and around and around. But,
it just whines.
Yeah.
That noise exactly.
You yeah. sound like a haunted door.
I'm coming for you.
I'm telling you, undead specter. Anyway, that was my conspiracy corner. So coming back out.
Are we doing a bit again?
No.
Okay.
No. Bit over.
We're just having fun.
I'm just trying to.
Bit over. It's done.
Just trying to pay attention.
I don't actually think Don Paragon is a vampire or anything like that, but.
No, he's just a leech.
That. He is definitely. Again, he's not what I was expecting, but it did make me happy to see how, like, anime villain he is, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
With the white hair, and he's very flamboyant.
Well, I didn't expect, like, a British dandy in such a heavily Western and Mexican world, really. So that was the biggest surprise. See all the pictures on the walls go, oh, he's a ninny. Super surprising.
I
haven't heard that word in a sentence in a long time.
Say it again next week.
Well
looking
done.
At the aesthetic of the show, especially looking at his soldiers, you definitely get those shades of like Spanish aristocracy coming to, you know, the North American continent and everything like that. Those are kind of the shades that I get, is that this is like a European nobleman that came to a country that wasn't his. And granted, we don't know much about this world, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was that sort of analog there. Especially considering how tight of a grasp he seems to have on the one source of water in what seems to be the foreseeable area. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you bravely stumble across that sort of thing, but somehow he was the first to bravely stumble across it.
PR, mostly.
Yeah.
That's how you do it. He's a really good spin doctor.
Yep. He's the colonization version of a YouTube comment going first. I mean,
oh
right?
Oh my god, you're right. But he did it in like size 35 font with a sparkle gif over it.
A little bit. Talking about his interactions with Toth and with the rest of the Dandelions, it seems like Toth has, and we got this very much last episode too, it seems like Toth has really been at this quest for a long time, and he doesn't really believe in her to make any progress, because he's like, oh, hey, you know, same old song and dance, same old song and dance. I've got things to do. Why don't we just, like, skip this part, and you go on doing whatever it is you do.
We found him.
Well, I think that discussion with Don Pettigone was very telling in what he is interested in. He is very much, he understands his position of power, but in terms of we hear about El Rey for the first time. So these orders from El Rey to find the nomad or just whatever, as long as you're doing it, I can send a report telling him, oh, we're scouring the desert like every day.
You continue your never-ending quest.
But that's the thing, is it's not a noble pursuit. It's, okay, good, we can say that we're doing our job so that I can make money off of these people at this well. Like, that's the type of person it is. The bare minimum, at least I'm getting mine, whatever, just keep going. All of your stuff is funded by El Rey anyway.
As long as you tick the box, who cares?
Yeah.
Up until they actually did make progress, in which case, having failed to bring the nomad back is a little bit more dire. Like, it was one thing when he was just fabled to be out there. It's different when he is. Mm. You saw it. There were lots of witnesses, and you failed.
I mean, fail consistently at a low level, it just kind of becomes background noise. But suddenly, the stakes are much higher, and a failure at that level is that much worse. So on one hand, it's like, oh, we punished your success because you found him, but you didn't get him. So you succeeded, but then you didn't. So it does come across as a punishment for success, but I can also kind of see why he did it. And as much as I dislike Red Manuel, that man is charismatic.
Yes, but yeah, it's even more so after the revelation of, oh, well, it's still going to be me. Me putting the call out for all of these bounty hunters or freelancers it still shows that I made the progress. I'm the one that's doing the best work because I'm putting the call out for this, and then people can bring him back to me so that I can take him to El Rey. It's still very selfish.
Yeah. And if nothing else, there is a much more up-to-date and accurate wanted poster out there now, despite the fact that it still has claws for some reason.
I'm going to get you.
The Don referred to the nomad as his magical meal ticket, which I think that basically says everything about his intentions. Like, he wasn't actually interested in what the nomad could actually do. He's just there to get the reward essentially promised by El Rey.
Well, and we got a good measure of the Don's character before he even showed up. Because we saw his guards essentially bleeding people dry of their gold at the door just to get in. And we saw another one tackling a guy for trying to collect a single drop of water. Like, if he's passing down these kinds of orders, then that's an indictment of his character before he ever actually shows up on the screen.
Yeah, it makes me think that the desert world that we're in, and I grew up in the desert, so, like, to me, it's just home. I don't necessarily think of a desert as a wasteland, but I think the implication here is that, like, looking at both the Oasis and at Bliss Hill, I think the situation is a little bit more dire than I initially thought. Because, again, that first location that we got in the first episode was this lush, beautiful jungle. And that seems to be not how the rest of the world is. And so that's a very interesting sort of world, and it possibly informs of why maybe El Rey wants the Nomad.
We talked about it a little bit last week, and people in chat, ZeroNinja86, a lot of people are bringing up, why does El Rey want the Nomad? And in case you missed it, make sure you subscribe and you hit that bell so that you can watch our shows as they happen, snaps or else. I figure it's more of a nobody can be more powerful than me, so let's get this guy, and then I'm the most powerful person in the world because I, from God or from higher up or whatever, El Rey needs to be the most powerful person. And if there's somebody out there that can use magic, he's not the most powerful person out there.
I'm kind of wondering if El Rey isn't also another magic user and just keeping it way the heck under wraps.
Just keep it on the DL.
Highlander-ing this. It can only be one.
Closet magician.
Closet magician.
Says Pepsi Fan 24.
Thank you, Pepsi Fan.
I like that.
But there's that. There's the possibility that even ambient magic creates life. I think you and I were talking about that a little while ago. And so just having the Nomad hunkered down somewhere might have made this lush forest, this jungle. We don't know. Mm. It still just kills me that the immediate reaction is, oh, it has plants growing and a running river, which is an obvious source of water. Burn it down.
But, to your point, Mark, I feel like that, like, the little bit we get here informs a lot about Toth's character. Mm-hmm. Because it didn't take really much for the Dawn to very much put her down and discredit her. And I'm not sure if maybe that's because she's a woman, or maybe even a woman of color, or like, and somehow that makes Rojo, Red Manuel, if somehow that like inherently makes him quote unquote more trustworthy just because he happens to be an assertive man in her group.
We're trying not to lean into the next episode too much, but
I mean by the time this meeting shakes out, like, Red Manuel is the one that gets to go after the Nomad, and the Dawn is basically like, Toth, you're kind of demoted, you don't get to chase him until you prove yourself again.
Go do some fetch quests.
There's some solid stuff in chat.
There is.
Kim Griffin says El Rey probably knows the Nomad personally, regardless of whether or not the Nomad knows or remembers El Rey. El Rey might want the Nomad to make an army. That's from ZeroNinja86. Danger. I thought El Rey was just on Paragon talking in the third person, but I'd love that he's I'd love it if he's the villain who's one higher up than Don, which is what it seems like. And AJ the Edgelord. El Rey is Ospin in a past reincarnation.
Yeah.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
The Nomad is a walking curtain.
Wait, guys. Okay, I'm going back into conspiracy corner. The Nomad is a maiden.
No, Nomad's a wizard.
Oh, no.
He gave away all his power, and now all he can do is...
We're in like dystopian future of Ruby.
I do love that we have this moment with the Nomad of, what else can you do? And he just kind of Kanye shrugs it out like, I mean, I can do this. Isn't this enough?
We'll get to it. It is cute too that Scout is consistent in this episode, and that the one time she gets called on to inform something, she wasn't even raising her hand.
No. You in the front.
I did like rewatching that and realizing like she hadn't been raising her hand. He just volunteered her to give the information. And also knowing that like these are the type of people who will use a person's conscience against them is not great. Not super good. Do we have any other thoughts on the Dawn, sort of Toth's potential journey, or just the Oasis in general?
I'm waiting for Scout to eventually just break off on her own. given the way that people are treating her, given what she knows about the Nomad, and just given her general personality. I'm waiting for things to hit a breaking point, and I am waiting for her to set off for the Nomad on her own.
Mm-hmm.
Toth, too, in a different capacity.
Yeah, I'm waiting for what? I'm waiting for Toth to be tested. Like, we still don't know much about her and her past, but if she's... We don't know if this is personal. We don't know her relationship with the stories of the Nomad, how they were, why she's so dead set on it. Is it for personal reasons? Is it for professional reasons? And what is it, especially after being sort of set off to the outer reaches, is that going to lead into looking for the Nomad? Or is it going to be like, yeah, we're going to stop halfway there and just go after the Nomad? Like, we don't know. I'm excited to see what makes her drop everything and listen to her heart.
And we have this continuing repetition of rules are rules, which makes me wonder if she's using that as a shield or a crutch. Like, is this something that she truly believes in, or is this just a, well, you know, the world kind of sucks and things are difficult for people, but rules are rules. Like, this is the way it works and I follow this code. I'm getting shades of Locus and it scares me.
I mean, again, at this point, her arc could go either way.
Her arc could go on.
Oh my God. It could. Goodbye, Mark.
Bye.
It's been fun.
Bye, buddy.
Every night in my dreams, I see you. I feel you.
And that's all we're going to let you go with, because I don't want to get hit with a copyright strike.
Yep,
anyway,
that's all.
Before it gets counted as a performance. For me, looking at the Oasis,
Isn't it always a performance?
Looking at the Oasis, this world is a lot more Mad Max than I kind of initially pictured it as. And so I kind of look at Toth and her potential journey. I kind of look at her in a lot of ways as sort of a Furiosa, but not, obviously not, just kind of a woman who clearly had to claw and be tougher than everybody else to get to where she is.
Oh, absolutely.
In a very male-dominated field and world. And I'm looking at this going, like, she probably had to claw to get to where she is, and yeah. I don't necessarily know how her moral code sort of ties into that, but she clearly had to work exceedingly hard just to get to where she's at, and she's still very much disrespected at basically every turn. So it makes a lot of sense that she is the way she is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... It'll be interesting to see where she goes, and I hope, because I absolutely adore the fact that Scout has a crush on her and clearly idolizes her and really looks up to her. I'm hoping that the two of them still working together, that Scout can bring out the best in her. I really worry about that, though.
Cam Griffin in chat says, witness Red Manuel.
Witness me!
He does the spray and it's gold.
Oh, but then when he gets lit on fire, he's too proud to ask for help.
Oh. He's claustrophobic, so he's too proud to say anything.
All right, so I believe that sort of does it for that side of things. Really quickly, I want to talk to you guys about iTunes. Folks, thank you so much to everybody who's gone to iTunes to rate, subscribe, leave a comment. We love hearing from you, and it is the best way to let our producers know that you guys like the show that we're putting on. And it's an absolute pleasure whenever we get the chance to sit down and talk about Rooster Teeth shows. And I actually don't have iTunes pulled up, but normally we give you guys a shout-out. So if you haven't already... Oh!
We don't have one.
Okay, great.
But I did want to shout-out two of our favorite... members of the crew that may or may not be watching right now, Eddie Rivas and Al McClellan.
Hey!
We're big old fans of yours, and we hope to talk more about Nomad of Nowhere, and if you have a spare Wednesday evening, give us a call, because we'd love to have you on the show.
We absolutely would.
Aww.
We would.
Thank you guys.
But actually, we've
come play with us
while we're sort of in the like talking about everything. I've just been noticing we've been getting a lot more subscribers on our YouTube channel, like the Rooster Teeth review, the ABTV Rooster Team channel. And in case people don't know, I just wanted to take the time. Go to YouTube, just go on YouTube, look for ABTV Rooster Team. That is where all of the future Welcome to Vail stuff is going to live.
Which there is more.
We put episode one up just by itself, so that way we still kind of made this a destination where if you want the behind the scenes stuff, you can go here. But episode one by itself is available to listen to right now on that YouTube page, as well as some of the old stuff that we did for RTX's the season three memorial that I did. That was really stupid.
I thought it was fun.
Yeah. I did an unboxing of an entire box of Ruby blind boxes
Is the Camp song parody
the Camp Camp song parody is on there. That's I think that's what started the channel, was just a place to put that piece of garbage. If you want to get Welcome to Vail stuff as it comes out, subscribe to that channel, because that's where it's gonna go. I think we're pretty close to episode two, because we definitely have enough now, thank you. we definitely have enough to fill an episode two. And actually, I wanted to put this call out. If you know anybody that does fan music for Rooster Teeth properties, we want to get them involved in Welcome to Vail, much like we did in the first episode. We need a weather report. So
the weather is always changing.
So if you know anybody that does fan music, if you're a fan of anybody that does fan music, send them our way so that we can feature them. And we're also trying to figure out ways to involve the community in doing Welcome to Vail stuff. But we really like doing it. And if you want to see more of it, why don't you go, and screw you, Steve, because I'm doing this in the middle of the show, why don't you go to tpublic.com/the rooster team. That's what it is. That is our store. We were gonna have three things until I passed out, but we do have a third thing.
It's almost like you're busy.
It's almost, but we do have a third design going up. That's good. That's a version of a logo for us that I think is really cool. So make sure to go over there. Stuff's really cheap, but it helps support us and it allows us more time to do stuff like Welcome to Vail, which seems to be going over well because there are people that I don't recognize that are subscribing to us, which means it's good things.
Good stuff.
Happy beeps.
And in all honesty, guys, we just absolutely love talking about Rooster Teeth related stuff. Doing this Welcome to Vail project is insanely fun and creatively fulfilling in a lot of ways. And so thank you guys for allowing us to have fun and come have fun with us. And if you guys want to have fun and learn and grow in all areas of your life, for those of you who do, we've got a podcast for you. Conversations with Maria Menounos Podcast Edition is hosted by our AfterBuzz TV founder and drops every Friday on iTunes. Conversations with Maria Menounos features celebrity and influencer interviews, along with secrets and tips on how to be better in all aspects of life, from health and wellness to career, relationships, finances, and more. Let our Maria be the big sister you've always wanted. Just go over to iTunes and subscribe to Conversations with Maria Menounos for free. Be sure to rate and comment, and when you do, let Maria know it was us who sent you there. Specifically, Rooster Teeth Reviews, a.k.a. the Nomad of Nowhere After Show. Conversations with Maria Menounos Podcast Edition. Check it out.
It's basically Get Good, the podcast, but then it tells you how to get good.
it's a great show. Maria is very well versed in various parts of life, and she has a cookbook that's really good. It's a lot of Greek food, which, if in case you didn't know, she's Greek. But I would highly recommend it to add to your podcast rotation every Friday.
The cookbook is the Every Girl's Guide to Cooking.
That's one of them.
Yes.
Yeah, I forgot the name of the second one though. She busy. You're in Boston, she has a food location in Fenway Park.
Nice.
So if you're a baseball fan in Boston, you can eat some of the recipes. Sample some of the recipes and then pick up the book on Amazon. And sort of transitioning back into the show, I wanted to thank D. Baker, Ninetale Phoenix, and Imperial Waltz for subscribing immediately to our homepage.
Thank you
very much. Thoroughly appreciate it.
You guys are the best.
You're the best.
Thank you so much. All right, let's get back to it. So, despite the Dawn believing that the Nomad would soon succumb to the elements,
the elements will slow him to a pathetic crawl.
Oh my gosh. guys.
And then it just got to him skipping and waving at skeletons and rocks like he's a cartoon character.
I mean, well, he's, yes.
But he's really a cartoon character, more so than everyone else in this cartoon.
Now, I think as a magical creature, I think it's safe to assume that he is not human after seeing just how much of a pep in his step he actually had. I'm not sure he needs to eat or drink. I'm a little concerned about
that. Might be an advantage of being a magical character. As you may,
that might be why El Rey wants him.
They might be cursed. We don't know, because like the pirate's curse from Pirates of the Caribbean,
Curse of Black Pearl, the first one,
the original one,
Curse of Black Pearl. Was they any water or food turned to ash in their mouths? So it could be a situation where they've just lived with it.
So the nomad is Barbossa this whole time.
Yeah.
Nailed
it.
This isn't an alternate.
Jeffrey Rush.
You best start believing in magic stories. You're in one.
This isn't a post-apocalyptic Ruby world. This is actually post-apocalyptic Pirates of the Caribbean.
There are no oceans.
And there are no oceans left. No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Bad Katie.
Good Katie. Katie, yes.
Katie, no.
Katie, absolutely, yes.
But yeah, so it's interesting to think that, yeah, maybe his magic isn't actually magic. Maybe it's a curse. Mm. That's a thought.
And part of the curse is they can't talk, they can't communicate, they can't this, they can't that.
I was going to ask, because obviously we've known that the nomad is a mute up until this point. I was going to ask if maybe one of the reasons why he doesn't talk is because somebody, yeah, maybe cursed him into silence, because maybe what's sort of missing from the magical component aspect of things is the ability to recite incantations. There's a lot of precedent in fantasy stories about the power of the words themselves and the way they are used to harness magic. Maybe the reason he can't talk is because somebody didn't want him to use his full abilities. And so all he can do now is clap on.
Hmm. So and he only has somatic spells, vocal and material. Or I just went full D&D there. Anyway.
None.
Yeah.
Still,
only somatic.
Until the nomad makes some sort of seal in the sand with various ashes and metals and things of that nature.
Oh no!
Different flavor of creating life. Thank
he's
you.
Just a boy who got attached to a suit of armor.
No. You went there.
That
I did.
Said, I wouldn't be surprised if his.
Oh no!
You did it.
I'm sorry.
No, you went there.
Okay, continue.
I wouldn't be surprised if potentially his memory, we don't know how long his memory is or if he's missing chunks of things, and his magic and his voice were all tied up together in something, and that he is missing all of them.
Or
maybe, because he definitely had that weird flashback moment in episode one that hurt all of our hearts, and he seems to have emotional reactions to brooms, so...
Here's one from Alachroma. Maybe the nomad just forgot, can only speak Zimnian and, can't speak English. That's one just from, well, I know, I guess that's one for you too, but, yeah.
Yeah. Does anyone speak Undercommon?
Guys, the sea witch stole his voice.
And the ocean.
No.
And that's why he can't get it back, is because there's no sea anymore.
Their voice died with the sea.
Oh no!
And that's why he's so salty.
Oh, but I'm so yeah, let's talk about Bliss Hill a little bit.
Actually, really quickly, seeing the nomad walk through the desert and see all of the skeletal things. Wait until the day where you piss off the nomad, and the nomad goes, "Hey, giant skeleton thing."
Oh my gosh!
But here's the question.
Undead army.
Would the skeleton animate as one whole big thing, or would each separate component animate? Because
yes.
At the moment, there's nothing holding it together. It's a whole bunch of little separate pieces.
I would like to think, we're talking Looney Tunes. I would like to think that, like, ground starts to shake, a form starts to get taken, and then they all drop down and they're all individual little bones.
Yes!
Just like wiping their eyes.
See, yes. I would love to see a Harry Dresden sue the T-Rex moment. Like, just full on, let's go.
I never made it to that book.
It's beautiful.
Oh boy.
Usually necromancy is a bad thing, but oh man.
We can train these undead raptors. We can weaponize them. That's El Rey's plan. He just wants a bunch of undead raptors.
Pepsi Fan 24 says giant skeleton dragon with googly eyes.
Yes. Guys, could you imagine the talking about Ruby again, could you imagine the undead version of Kevin? Just doing all sorts of at
Kevin's
El Rey's
stone
best.
Right now, so I can imagine it. that would be a clap on moment. We need to get rid of this dragon. I got it.
No.
But it's just this stone dragon with googly eyes, and it flies off somewhere else and statues somewhere else, and it's just like, ding, ding.
It would be funny to see how the personality of a thing like that changes instead of a ferocious beast. It's just got the little googly eyes.
Little poppers.
Let's talk about Bliss Hill for a moment. Looking at Bliss Hill, I know you've seen it, Katie. Mark, did you ever see the movie Rango?
Oh no! I didn't see Rango.
Oh God!
I kind of got some like Rango. Not. We should stop talking about Johnny Depp movies because he's a piece of garbage.
You're
but
not
Rango's
wrong.
A good movie. As is the first Pirates of the Caribbean.
You're really not wrong about the Rango vibes here, though.
I guess it's less.
But Rattlesnake Jake just shows up at the end.
Oh, I love Rattlesnake Jake. But I mean. It's not so much just a component that's wholly unique to that movie. It's a very common Western thing to go to a town and where the whales all dried up and everything like that. But that was what immediately came to my mind. And it looks like the people in this town are in kind of a state where bragging about being both poor and illiterate seems to be a bonus.
I think they're in kind of a holding pattern. Like, everything is terrible, but as long as we keep it at this level of terrible, we can make it okay. Because if we try to make it not terrible, we have the potential to actually make it worse, which is what happens in this episode, because the nomad gets strong-armed into bringing the wheel to life, and then we just immediately badmouth the wheel like it's not suddenly a sentient being.
Mark, you look contemplative.
It's the idea of time in this place. Have we gotten any sort of a time frame of how
long it's been?
Yeah.
No, not in between episodes.
And if people referred to them as themselves as children, like how long has El Rey been in power? Has it been multiple people called El Rey? Is it some person in armor?
The only indication of time that we've had in this series so far is that nobody has seen the Nomad for 100 years. Mm-hmm. We don't know if a year in this world is the same as what we would consider a year. I assume that because they mention year, that we're going with our clock and calendar.
Really quick. Pepsi Fan killing it with one of my favorite lines. You slinging me some ballyhoo?
The silent sale.
Crafty.
This is probably not accurate, but what if the reason why people are looking for the Nomad is that time has stopped?
Oh.
That's really weird, really out there, but the reason why there's no water is because the planet is literally stopped.
This is some 11th hour noise.
It's really, really weird, really out there, but like, that's the, like, we haven't, the, like, just because we haven't gotten establishment of time doesn't mean that there's this, that, or the other thing. Or because supply is starting to dry up, like there's no water, and very little civilization, like, what, I don't know. I don't know. What if it's something so dire that... what if El Rey, they're going to build up El Rey as this terrible person, but what if, at the same time, I'm completely open to El Rey being a benevolent leader who's just like, look, we're dead.
Thank goodness found the magic man.
Probably not, but you know, there's that possibility too of all of these bad people for bad reasons, but ultimately it ends up being a benevolent presence that's like, our planet is dying.
Or
what I love is that we can go to all these fun places. We have, in public release, we have like 27 minutes worth of content if you're a sponsor, we're at about 40. So we've had some world building, but we're still looking at this world through a pinhole and slowly making it larger. And I just love these preliminary parts of a series where you get this little teeny bit of world building and you lean on it and go, well, what about this? Well, what about this?
Where the
well,
possibilities are endless.
Yes, and the rampant creativity from everyone is so much fun.
One Dumb Gamer says, Nomad made the moon alive and it left. Cam Griffin says, I think the Nomad clapped all the water and the water up and left. Yeah, something like that. AJ the Edgelord, maybe the Nomad is E.T. and the glowing in his chest is the mothership calling to him. Nicholas Brennan, I think the glowing in his chest from the first episode is a power being bestowed upon him. He had them before and now his good deeds are getting his powers back.
He's like Eddie McDowell. He's got to do 100 good deeds.
And not a
dog.
You,
before he gets all his magical powers back.
If you were in chat earlier, you would have seen that reference because somebody made the reference. And if, I apologize for not saying who, or for not remembering who. But
I mean, instead of a dog.
Sam Green. Or they live in a desert.
This is like the fourth time in a month in various different ways that 100 good deeds for Eddie McDowell has come up in front of me. Like, what the heck, guys?
I didn't even watch that show.
It just weird. Got added to Netflix or something. I don't know.
It's just like everyone's thinking of it. I'm like, it's part of, it was a perfectly serviceable show.
Cam Griffin was the person who made the reference.
It's part of Mercury being in retrograde now. It's just back in our public consciousness.
We're not back in moon denying, are we?
Buy my book. Anyway.
We've got like 10 minutes left. We've barely gotten into the Nomad segment. I'm sorry.
So yeah, Bliss Hill, it's the well is all dried up, or the watermill seems to be all dried up, or at least busted in some capacity. The townsfolk, and this is where I kind of feel like a little bit of real world stuff gets written into the characters a little bit, because the only people who are actively seeking to make the town better instead of reveling in being poor and illiterate are the kids. You know, the Mill Preservation Society, which features Barty, who is the son of the sheriff who also likes to hang out waiting for strangers in dumpsters? It's been a long time since I've been a child. Did you guys ever hide in dumpsters just waiting for people to walk by?
Hide, yes. Dumpsters, no.
Dumpsters, yes. Hide, no.
Between you and I, we have a Venn diagram overlap. I loved the very abrupt, very invasive, very varying questionnaire, and the fact that he seemed disappointed that the Nomad had not killed a man that the Nomad remembers. I think there's some memory shenanigans going on with that man.
I was also very surprised that this boy was not an orphan, but was in fact the son of the sheriff, because one of the questions was, do you have any food? No. Dang.
No, but I found some food detritus and I made it dance and oh, it's gone now. I just love if that ain't this town in a nutshell.
And that's the second time recently she's gone to the bird swiping gag, at least in recent memory, and I'm a big fan of that one.
It's such a good gag. Yeah. It's so simple and so perfect.
It never fails to make me laugh. Even in like garbage comedies, it always makes me laugh. Like, I'm thinking specifically of
Garbage Pail Kids?
No, the
garbage comedy.
The Emperor's New Groove prequel.
Kronk's New Groove.
Yes. Oh God, yeah. It was not a good movie, but it had that gag in it, and that was the one gag that was like spot on perfect. Anyway, so Barty, when he sees that the Nomad can do magic, asks him to go ahead and see if he can use his magic to fix the mill, which, as we now find out, you can clap on, but you cannot clap off.
Yeah.
I wonder good to know. If he just couldn't clap off something that big, because he initially protested, like, yeah, I can do tiny things just fine, but this is big and it's kind of, like, I wonder, because we saw that he had a giant rock friend at one point, and I adored his giant rock friend for all 5 seconds that it was on screen. But I wonder if he, in the 100 years that he was presumably in this jungle, if he didn't test things out, be like, all right, how long does this last? What can I make it do? How big can I go? Like, are we running into any problems with this? So it seems like the, yeah, I have trouble with larger objects comes from experience. And then he can't control the mill when the mill gets angry when, again, we're bad-mouthing a newly sentient object like it's a good idea.
And a large newly sentient object.
Yeah. And it still has the googly eyes and the stick arms.
That's like, as it was freeing itself, it was like, how is this going to work? Is it going to be rolling on its face over and over again? It's like, no, all right, cool. They had to make that decision immediately, and they established new rules with how that works and how newly created pieces of life operate, and there we go.
And he tried to clap it off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was interesting to me.
This is the second show that I've covered here at AfterBuzz where there is a spinning wheel of death.
Z-Nation and
rolling
the cheese.
Through the country. But we also, you know, we get the sheriff basically running him out of town. And everybody seems to think that, oh, wait, great, way to make it worse. When in fact, he was just doing what you asked him to do. Mm-hmm. And the sheriff didn't stop him. He was like, okay, yeah, let's see what magic does. Magic made everything worse, just like we thought it would. And they run him out of town.
And we talked about it last week, maybe mindset, maybe how he feels affects the emotions of the things that he brings to life.
He was anxious when he brought it to life, so yeah, maybe that's why it had a different temperament than a lot of his other little rock friends.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it was also immediately insulting.
That too.
Like, I'm a brand new being in this world, and they hate me.
Well, I mean, some of his creations just immediately start dancing, a little do-si-do the moment they're brought to life.
And a little third base coaching.
Before they get picked up by a predator.
Pepsi fan says, what is my purpose? You make water. Oh my God. And Cam Griffin says,
welcome to the club, pal.
And Cam Griffin says, I don't think he controls any of the beings he brings to life. They respect him for being given life, but they are sentient. When they get upset, they act on it. I think you're right.
I think so, yeah.
We did see a rock commit a violence with half of a mop, so.
And you mentioned that one of you mentioned that he seems to like brooms.
Me, yep. He seems to have emotional reactions to brooms.
One of the first things he did was reach for a broom when he thought he was alone in that alleyway.
Yep.
Maybe he was very, like, in a very Disney princess-esque way, maybe once upon a time, you know, he had all of his creatures would come to life and help him clean things.
That's also the thing.
Very sad when Mop Friend got cut in half.
Somebody mentioned that they might be like a Sorcerer's Apprentice type.
Yeah.
And despite them being the last magical being, they don't know anything.
Guys.
We can't do Disney stuff. We can't do Disney stuff.
What if he is a Sorcerer's Apprentice broom brought to life and that's why we don't see his face?
Oh, and he's saying hi to family!
He's just a creature with googly eyes and stick arms that can give the similar life to other people, or to other inanimate objects.
To be a real boy.
None of his creations can speak.
Could be a mixture of the Sorcerer's Apprentice and Pinocchio.
That's very true. All right, we're getting a little lost in the weeds and predictions territory. Do we have any final thoughts on this episode? Oh, just the fact that we get introduced to what seems to be a bounty hunter.
Ranch hand, says the credits.
The very end here.
Voiced by Ian Sinclair.
Yeah, I thought it was Gray for a second, but he busy.
There were a couple voices where they're new cast members to Rooster Teeth where I was like, for a solid couple minutes, I thought Don Paragon was Shannon. And I was just like, what?
Same. I thought
like,
so as well.
Why do I know that voice? Oh, there's no reason for me to know that voice. It's someone who hasn't done voice work before.
Anyway, so yeah, final thoughts on this episode?
I love it. I love it. It hurt my heart. I love it.
Yeah, all good stuff.
The subtle world building, I was a big fan of, and it took a second viewing to go, oh, wait, no, all of this is important. So the fact that they're not necessarily rushing through it, but trying to get us established makes me wonder how long the season is actually going to be.
I hope we get a decent amount because I'm loving it.
Yeah, I don't think we know yet. I don't think anyone has said.
I haven't seen any official announcements. But speaking of some official Rooster Teeth announcements, maybe we should go on over.
We've got like zero time, so
news
we just
and gossip really
super quick.
AfterBuzz TV News.
Okay, guys, so a couple of new bits. The new Rooster Teeth site is up, and yay! It works, and yay, there's a new user interface and everything.
Yep. It's beautiful.
Yep.
Check it out.
Rooster Teeth, or specifically the RT boxes, are coming back. Season one is going to be an Achievement Hunter box.
Yeah, the first one's going to be an Achievement Hunter box.
Yeah, the boxes are now divested from the Double Gold membership.
Mm-hmm. Woot, woot. And next up on my list, if you guys are big Funhouse fans, they are having a live show at the Regent Theater on April 26th. If you guys are interested in seeing that, tickets are available
you local Los Angeles people.
And one other thing that was just posted to Twitter, Samantha Ireland's new short film, Wolves Inside, has wrapped.
Yes!
So hey! Principal photography is done, and they're going into post-production. Make sure you give her support at Ireland_Sam.
If you guys like Westerns, which I assume if you're watching the show that you probably do, mm-hmm. it's a female-led Western short, so go and support.
And also, didn't we get the announcement that RVB season 16 is starting this month?
Next week.
Yeah.
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 What?
Yeah. Please clap in chat, says Jordan said the season of Nomad is 12 episodes, which okay. God Great. Bless that name. It's super relevant right now. And we have, because of Rooster Teeth's 15th anniversary, which was like 3 days ago, April 1st, y'all, they are doing a documentary called Why We're Here, and that is going to premiere, I believe, for first members on April 15th. Mm-hmm. So
on Community
that'll
Day.
Be fun.
Yeah.
Super
Community Day.
Super excited yep. about all of that. I think that just about does it, guys.
And Malachromas' RTX London was announced for September 15th and 16th this year.
Woot woot!
Yes.
Community Day again. Good for them.
Alrighty. Katie, where can people go if they want to find you?
I'm Katie Cullen. You can follow me all over the social medias as well as on YouTube and Twitch at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. If you would like to see reactions to these episodes, the YouTube channel is where those live.
Mark Bidonica is my name. You can find me on Twitter at Mark Bidonica. I'm doing a lot right now. Collider, I have a Schmodown number one contendership match this Friday, so tune in. Check out the fun character stuff I get to do. I'm in a podcast with Alexis Torres and Michael Young. It is the Nerd Soul Podcast, so go and look up Nerd Soul Podcast on iTunes. We just started it. We're doing it every 2 weeks until we sort of have a good schedule going. But one episode this weekend, we talked mostly about anime and animation, and I bring up some RT stuff. And then the other was a review of Ready Player One. You should listen to that. If you've seen the movie. If you've seen the movie, you should listen to that. We get into spoilery. We talk for about an hour, so it's not super long. And then I also wanted to thank Elizabeth Ernzen, Cam Griffin, and Pepsi Fan for also subscribing to us. If you are watching us for the first time, make sure you subscribe here to AfterBuzz TV Animation, because this is where our regular show lives. But if there's any extra fun stuff that we want to do, theories, like fun bits and blips from episodes, we usually put those highlights up on our YouTube channel, ABTV Rooster Team. That's also on Twitter, at ABTV Rooster Team. Follow us there. That's where the first of our new stuff goes before we retweet it all. And RTX is coming up, and so far it sounds like we're going to be there. So yep. We have no idea what we're going to do yet, but it's going to be a lot of something.
We'll be there.
Also follow Stacey Shuttleworth at Stacey Shuttles and Patrick at Pete of the D's.
Yep, both those things. I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheMenguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. Can't say thank you enough to everybody in the live chat, everybody in the hashtag. You guys are the best. Thank you guys so, so much. We will see you all next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.